Pop Talk continues. Sandy Clough with you on your home for the best live local sports talk. Denver's sports station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Andrew Feinstein is the founder of DenverStiffs.com. As good a means of following the Nuggets as far as information and unvarnished commentary as any outlet, frankly, over the past 5 years since Andrew founded the site. And to do a postmortem of sorts on the Nuggets, he's been kind enough to join us tonight on the Sport Clips MVP Hotline. Good evening, Andrew. How are you doing?
Good evening, Sandy. I love the lead-in with REM. That was awesome.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
I do.
We had that selected for your benefit.
I appreciate it.
We're happy that you approve. We were talking right before we came on. Let's allow you to attack a premise that I've been advancing over the past few nights, that if the Nuggets are committed to any particular individual going forward, open-minded as they may be on a number of other possible scenarios, it is to extending Ty Lawson's contract over the course of the summer. Are we operating from a sound premise, or would you question that premise?
You know, he's a tough one for me. We have a column coming out, I think, either tomorrow or Friday, where all the writers at Denver Stiffs picked our MVPs for the season. I think most of us chose Ty Lawson because as Ty goes, the Nuggets go. And I know Masai is very high on him, and I know they want to re-sign him, and it was some good reason. I mean, when he performs, they win, but he also disappears a lot. And it makes you cringe a little bit to think that the MVP of your team, perhaps the centerpiece, the leader, is a guy that can disappear. That being said, I don't know who's out there. I don't think Deron Williams is walking through the Pepsi Center locker room anytime soon. So Lawson, he can be terrific at times, but there are other times where I look at him and I wonder if he's maybe the NBA's best backup point guard.
This team, then, going forward, are you sold on the idea of progress, or was this season for you more complicated than that? Was it two steps forward and maybe the occasional step back? I thought that the playoff series with the Lakers is somewhat similar to the season that unfolded as a whole. What is the proper perspective, generally speaking, for someone following the Nuggets to take right now?
I think it's progress. You know, with the exception of our Western Conference Finals run in 2009, you know, this team is basically folded like deck chairs in road closeout situations. And for the Nuggets to beat the Lakers in Game 5 after overcoming a very difficult season with lots of injuries and lots of missing pieces and the tight schedule and so forth, I think that it is progress. I think this young team kind of grew up before our eyes, and I think there's a lot of exciting stuff for them to build on right now. So I do think it's progress. I think that the Nuggets, unfortunately, you win championships by having a top five player. But when there's 30 teams in the NBA, 25 of them aren't going to have a top five player. And I don't see how this team will acquire one given its current state. But I do think this is a team that could wreak some havoc in the Western Conference. Beyond a second round playoff series, though, I just don't know.
Back in the East, we know that the teams remaining offer different models. Miami, the pure star system, where the rest of the team, quite frankly, outside of Wade and James, and now that Bosch is hurt, we'll throw Bosch in there. I mean, Andrew, it's a joke.
They're like a CBA team.
Exactly. It's the equivalent of a CBA team.
Yeah.
They have not yet won. In the West, we were talking about this earlier, clearly San Antonio and Oklahoma City have been by far the most impressive of the playoff teams. Boston may be back East, intriguing in a way, and we know they've won before, and they seem to have rebooted this year a little bit. But far and away, San Antonio and Oklahoma City are the best teams. When you say this year that Oklahoma City is one of the best teams, everybody nods in agreement. When you look at what San Antonio is doing, which might even be more impressive right now, doesn't that offer a little bit of hope to the Nuggets, this concept of not relying, although they're three wonderful players, exclusively on Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili, but having a little bit like what the Nuggets had in this series just concluded, a lot of guys averaging between 8 points, 9 points a game, and 18, 19 points a game, like eight or nine.
Yeah, the Spurs model is a very difficult one to replicate. I see your point in the sense that Tim Duncan's no longer a 2012 guy
right.
like he used to be.
Right.
But he is still Tim Duncan. And if you go back to 1980 and you look at 32 years of champions, and we've talked about this on your show many times, only the Spurs, and I guess you could throw in the Pistons there, are the only two teams that kind of fall out of that top 10 media market size that have won championships. And the Spurs were really the beneficiaries of luck a decade apart from each other. They got David Robinson in 88, and they got Duncan, I think, in 96. And, you know, the Spurs, it's a great model, but at the end of the day, I still believe that Tim Duncan is a superstar. I think Manu Ginobili is one of the greatest basketball players who's ever played. I mean, he carried Argentina to a gold medal, beating Team USA, and Tony Parker's pretty close to being a superstar.
Sure.
They're able to develop, what they've done in San Antonio, they've developed role players much better than the Heat have.
But they've changed their style. They play more like the Nuggets play now. It's offense first. It's a high pace. It's slashing, attack the rim. And everybody assumes that they're the antithesis of the Nuggets, and that hasn't been true for years. And so I'm saying these absolute models, star system, or something that only involves maybe top 10 player at every position. I mean, they're all mixed to some degree. The ones that work are mixed to some extent. San Antonio, you're right, it's almost impossible to replicate, but that seems to offer the best feature of both models, that they merge those features. And, of course, you got the best coach in Popovich, obviously.
You do. I'll tell you, the team that I think that is a model we could get excited about, and I'm rooting for them hard, is the Pacers.
Yes.
Because
there's
a team that basically, they put that team together. They didn't have a top five pick. I mean, they basically put that team together with mid-level first-round draft picks, a free agent signing here or there. They gave a young coach an opportunity to do something. You know, that's an exciting – that to me, the Pacers are a really interesting model. If they can somehow beat the Heat, and their window is now with Bosch being out, that's a model that I think the Nuggets could aspire to replicate a little bit.
Let's go back to the Nuggets in terms of a few individuals. How much did Gallinari disappoint you on Saturday night in Game 7?
Well, he did his Carmelo Anthony impersonation. I had to take a shot there.
That's a very cheap shot, Andrew.
Yeah, disappearing in the closeout game. Yeah. Very disappointing from Gallinari. I mean, he's being self-reflective about it. You have to believe that if he gets an opportunity to be in that situation again, he won't duck and cover, so to speak. I hate to think that the moment was too big for Gallo. I mean, he's played in New York. He's been around now for four or five seasons. But very, very disappointing. And if there's any silver lining, maybe that'll be fuel for him to work a little harder this offseason.
Aflalo, throughout the series and in particular Game 7 the other night.
Well, you and I watched together Game 5. And
yes.
You were begging for Aflalo to show up. And he finally did, I thought, those last couple games. And, you know, he had the unenviable task of guarding Kobe Bryant. I really like what I saw of Aflalo those last, 20 or so games of the season, 25 games.
Yeah, last month, sure.
Yeah, I like Aflalo. I mean, Bill Simmons wrote that I think Aflalo may be a top five shooting guard now, and I'd like to see him improve from there, but I was happy with what we got out of Aflalo eventually.
Fareed.
You got to love Fareed. I mean, are we looking at one of the great draft steals of the last decade? I mean, it's unbelievable that they picked him 22nd, and he's just nothing but pure energy. I was talking to some season ticket holders the other day, and they said Fareed is the reason why you want to buy tickets, because he actually cares about the outcome of the game more than we do as fans. And his energy is just contagious, and you can't say enough about that kid. I thought he was terrific. I'd like to see him get a mid-range jump shot this summer.
And are you a believer, a full-fledged advocate for JaVale McGee, or are there still reservations in your mind?
I'm a full-fledged advocate of JaVale McGee.
All right. You're right there with Stan Kroenke.
I'm sorry?
You're right there with Stan Kroenke. He was quoted in Woody's column the other day.
I think that stuff in Washington, I think he was in a poisonous atmosphere, and he was a young kid with some really bad influences there. I think he's a good kid. I think he's got huge upside. My concern is he's going to end up getting one of those contracts where you're going to cringe when he signs it and just hope it doesn't become an ugly, ugly contract. But his trajectory, whether statistically, development-wise, or whatever, is akin to Andrew Bynum's after 4 years. So I think that McGee's a game changer. He's the type of guy that, you know, we could start competing in the second round with a big guy like that, just like the Pacers are doing with Roy Hibbert.
Andrew Feinstein, our guest. Andrew, you got a few more minutes?
Sure.
All right. We'll break. We'll come back. We'll get to some other Nugget-related issues as we look ahead and look back a little bit on 2011-2012. Andrew Feinstein, our guest on the Sport Clips MVP Hotline. Club Talk continues. Stay with us on your home for the best live and local sports talk. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Hastings needs a rest, wouldn't you say? That's a long season. Actually, it wasn't a long season. It's just a compressed season. Lots going on. He needs a break. He really does. He was in here in the studio today. They had everybody in the studio today. Almost. EMAC is off today. We'll get everybody in the studio on the same day here pretty soon, I promise. Sandy Clef with you. Clef Talk on your home for the best live and local sports talk. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Andrew Feinstein, DenverStiffs.com. Our guest, the founder of the Nugget blog site that is a must read on a daily basis for fans following the Nuggets, and particularly over what should be an intriguing offseason. Let me ask one more question. Maybe the question is whether this guy is a core player or not going forward. We've talked about the other five, McGee, Fareed, Aflalo, Gallinari, and Lawson. Going forward, is Wilson Chandler a core player for you or kind of a fringe player for you?
I think he's a fringe player. I like Wilson Chandler. I like his versatility. I like the fact that he can guard the two, the three, or the four. I don't love the fact that he leans back every time he takes a jump shot. But with his hip surgery, you know, and the fact that we just gave him a pretty generous contract,
yes,
we're going to be stuck with him for a while. So let's see how he does. You know, I don't want your listeners to expect a lot of big moves this summer. I suspect the Nuggets are going to go with largely the same roster.
Yeah.
They may bring in a marginal free agent, but, you know, as like I said, unless you're – there's really no big free agent out there other than Darren Williams, and he's not coming here. So.
He's made a lot of moves, and the great Pete Vesey of the New York Post wrote at length about this in his column over the weekend about how they have made two major deals, but some little ones too, quote-unquote little ones. Maybe it's time, you're right, I think. Maybe it's time to just sit back and let things settle in and see what you have for a while rather than contemplating more major moves and changing out four or five guys over the summer.
Well, I would. I mean, I know that entering this season with the 66-game schedule, I know that Masai Ujiri and Josh Kroenke wanted to see kind of how this roster would do. They thought that this was kind of a free shot because you had a short season and
yeah,
it works out. If it works out, great. If it didn't work out, you can write it off as it was a squirrely season and it doesn't really count. And I think it did work out. But unfortunately, the sample size may not have been large enough
right
for them to make some judgment because so many guys were hurt. And then with McGee coming in, I think McGee only played like in the last, 17 games or something like that.
Yeah.
So they're going to need a bigger sample size. So I think a full training camp, which we did not have this year, with that core of six guys, like you mentioned, plus Al Harrington, maybe plus Mozgov, let's at least through the trading deadline of next season, let's see how this team does. One big question mark that they're going to have to deal with is backup point guard.
Yes, and I'm going to ask you about that. Andre Miller, unrestricted free agent. Reading the tea leaves for me, based on his postgame quotes on Saturday night, didn't sound to me like a guy would be coming back. How's
no, it sure didn't.
You?
And George loves Andre
I know
Miller.
He does.
And I don't know, I don't know how George would go through another season without him. But you know, Chauncey Billups is a free agent, so you never know. Maybe
absolutely,
he'd come back.
Yeah, and I don't think George would be opposed to that. Rudy Fernandez, I was reading your site today and some of the reaction comments, And I saw some suggesting that he's going to go back and play for Real Madrid. But again, from his comments fairly recently, it seemed that he was somewhat anxious to come back here, all things being equal, that he'd prefer to play with the Nuggets next year.
He might prefer to play for the Nuggets. I personally don't see him coming back. I think he's kind of an odd fit.
Yeah.
I just think that you know, Brewer's under contract for another year. Wilson Chandler will be back. I just don't know where Rudy fits for his price tag. I think he brought some electricity here, but he seemed, I don't know, he gets injured pretty easily, and I'm not sure we should be anxious to bring him back.
That back is a chronic concern.
Especially if you're in that position. You know, if you're a guy who's wholly dependent on your jumping ability and your speed, if your back goes, you know, that's just catastrophic.
We'll let you run on this, but, you know, Memphis loses in the first round with home court advantage. If you had to make a guess going into next year among teams in the Western Conference, we all talk about the importance of home court advantage, and I think we saw it again this year. What are the Nugget chances? What are the fair expectations for next year? My sense would be that nothing short of home court advantage is acceptable. And to get even for one round home court advantage, you basically got to win two-thirds of your games. Closer to three-quarters if you want home court advantage for more than one round, two rounds or more. Aren't the Nuggets going into next year supposed to be a team that wins 55 to 60 games, something they've never done throughout their NBA history?
They would have to surpass that 54 mark.
Yes.
I think you're being awfully ambitious if you think they're going to be a top two. They could crack the top four.
Yes.
But it's an arms race out there. And now that the Clippers have marched on to a second round, they're going to pick up some free agents that are going to play for a discount because they want to be in L.A. and they want to be with Chris Paul. The Lakers will always get a guy at a discount. The Spurs aren't going anywhere. Grizzlies aren't going anywhere. Thunder aren't going anywhere. So cracking that top four is going to be a tall order. And I just fear that we're going to be mired in this 50 to 54 win range, which should be something to be applauded.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the Western Conference it nets you a six seed.
Right. And I'm getting a particularly persistent texter who feels the way you did 5 years ago about George Karl. Let me just put it that way. And he keeps talking about this mantra that we're advancing, that they don't have home court advantage, can't be expected to win in the first round without home court advantage. And he said, well, then he should be a better regular season coach. And my point is that to be a quote-unquote better regular season coach, they'd have to get into that 55 to 60 win range. Larry Brown never did it. Doug Moe never did it. Dan Issel never did it, and George Karl hasn't done it yet here, as successful as he's been. You can win well over 60% of your games. That's a pretty fancy coaching mark, and still almost never have home court advantage. And we're also excluding 2010 in our conversation here, one, because George wasn't on the bench, but two, Andrew, as you well remember, they were 46-22 that year when George went to the sideline. That was a better team than they had the year before,
wow,
based
that's
on regular
year.
Season
that's
record.
A lost year.
That's a lost year.
Yeah.
But you look back, boy, if they had gone a round or two last year, that year, of course, maybe there wouldn't have been the changes that we've seen now that produced, I think, overall a better team, a better organization going forward. But it's just very difficult for people to understand that in a sport where it's pretty easy to make the playoffs, boy, it's hard to win once you get there. It really
it is
hard to win,
this,
even if you're real
this.
Good.
In 2009, we won 54 games, and that was the second-best record
in
the conference.
Yes, that year it was.
Could get the second-best record with 54 wins because all these teams do beat up on each other.
Right.
And in theory, back to what I just said a second ago, with a full training camp, all these youngsters, a regular schedule, the Nuggets should have a sizable home court advantage, and maybe they can get into that 54 to 56 territory.
Andrew, I think that's the big question. You know, can they get into somewhere between 54 and 56, 57 wins? Our friend Scott Hastings talked about 60 on the post game the other night. That's a little ambitious. I think that's a lot to ask. in a conference that at least among the top 5-6 teams, boy, it's awfully competitive. 60 wins, I don't know about that. But that's the question, and it'll be an interesting summer seeing what they do to try to get there to take that next step. Vic Lombardi had the good analogy the other day. Talked about relatively easy to go from a 20 handicap to a 9. Going from a 9 to a 2, that's a different story. That's a lot harder. And that's where the Nuggets are now. They're the 9 handicap trying to become scratch.
Yep.
Yeah, that's where they are. Andrew, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Sandy, thank you for having me on. Have a wonderful evening. Let's not be strangers this summer, even though
absolutely.
We're talking about baseball and Peyton Manning, I'm sure, for the next few weeks.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll probably take a break at least next week, but it will be as interesting a Nugget offseason as we have seen in quite some time.